I'm going to talk about distal humerus fractures. So distal humerus fractures are challenging injuries. Keep that in mind. These are frequently operative injuries. The operations are not particularly easy. They can be very satisfying. So let's go over some of the principles that I think will be helpful for you. Firstly, it's important to understand what you're up against, and that's easier said than done. And a lot of times, imaging can be a little bit difficult. It's not like you can just, you know, put the leg flat on the table, or I mean, with the elbow, it's a little trickier to get good imaging in the injured elbow. A lot of times, people get the best X-rays and they can, and then, you know, resident will just say, we'll get a CAT scan to help. But think about when you put a patient in the CAT scan table, the elbow is just, you know, the arms sort of forearms across the chest, elbows there, maybe they're, who knows how they're positioned. But they're not positioned the way most of the other body parts are, straight, longitudinally, up and down in the CT scanner, you know, axial images actually or axial. I mean, it's not like that. Everything is an obliquogram. I think going back to X-rays, try to make sure you have good X-rays. And if you've been to an AO course, you've probably heard about this, many advocate getting a traction AP radiograph. That can be the single most important image you get to help understand the fracture pattern. Traction does two things. It firstly allows you to orient the elbow into a normal standard AP projection that is useful in everybody's minds. Plus, a little bit of traction helps to sort of pull all the giblets and jumbled fragments, and certainly those fragments that have some ligament attachment, to get that ligamentotaxis and get some sort of appreciation of what you're dealing with. So, not a bad thing to get. Not everybody can tolerate it. You may not have the opportunity to get this in many cases, but if you're conscientious, you're able to take the time, and it's an efficient thing to do, considering what it might yield, then you should get it. Keep in mind that CT scan, though, still is important. If you have a fracture where it's unclear if there's intra-articular involvement, if it's unclear, what the extent of intra-articular involvement is, a CAT scan can be helpful. It is useful to tell your CT tech how you want the images oriented. Most of these scanners these days, if you just tell them how to orient the images in such a way that you're, you know, sort of axials or orthogonal to the long axis of the humerus. I mean, sagittals and coronals are in an anatomic plane you would expect to see. Then you have to tell them that. Also, I believe, should always get 3D recons, because that can take the distal humerus, however they scanned it, and at least give you something that gives you some idea about the surface anatomy, you know, and the personality of the fracture. You know, it's very important for pre-op planning purposes to understand the personality of the fracture, as you know. So, the operative considerations for these are, if you choose that this is a fracture that needs surgery, and keep in mind they don't all do. Extra-articular distal third fractures can be successfully treated non-surgically. And in fact, comparative studies of extra-articular distal third humerus fractures, non-operative versus operative, you know, often show pretty similar results. You'll get a little bit more radiographic malunion with non-operative, but you won't get as many nerve injuries as you do in the operative group. So, for extra-articular fractures, it's an option. But for intra-articular fractures, you don't have much of a choice. I mean, either you accept a potentially very poor result, or you choose an operative treatment, which could be open reduction internal fixation, and in some select few cases, total elbow arthroplasty. That's generally, I'm not going to go into that, but that's generally for the elderly patient, low-demand patient, unreconstructable fracture, oftentimes a very low, very distal, transarticular type fracture of the distal humerus. And to some degree, it's surgeon dependent as well. You know, somebody who's very, very comfortable doing them, you know, not comfortable doing ORAF as much, you know, may gravitate towards distal humeral arthroplasty and vice versa. The orthopedic trauma surgeon who doesn't do it that often and is more comfortable fixing it, you know, can go ahead and fix them. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad option, if you can get a, you know, reasonably good result. So, we'll talk about ORAF. So keep in mind, it's, like I said, very challenging procedure. This is not a quick case. For distal humerus intra-articular fractures, you're always talking about a posterior approach. So your positioning is always going to be prone or lateral. You always have to worry about where is your ulnar nerve. And you should be worried if you're going to go more proximal. And if the patient has a wrist drop, where's your radial nerve as well? If you're dealing with a very low distal fracture, oftentimes you won't see the radial nerve if you're operating that distally. But sometimes you'll have to find it. So you know, if, like I said, if you're going to go proximal, you'll need to know where it is. If the patient has a wrist drop, you know, you're concerned about it. It can be a little scary sometimes operating down in the distal third of the humerus if you don't know where the radial nerve is. So keep in mind that not only the ulnar nerve, but occasionally the radial nerve, you'll need to be able to find. And certainly for any fractures that extend up towards, you know, the middle third, your plate has to go, you know, up to the middle third of the humerus. You know, there's different fixation strategies, right? There's sort of orthogonal, traditional AO fixation, there are more parallel plate fixation options. I'll get into those in a second. You know, there's different surgical approaches, triceps sparing approaches, and then sort of, you know, olecranon osteotomy. So olecranon osteotomy certainly is a good workhorse type approach. It gives you, I think, unparalleled view. Those who like tricep sparing approaches would argue otherwise, but I mean, it's just, I think, a matter of just pure anatomy. You take the olecranon completely out of the way, no matter how much you spare the triceps, it's still in the way. You get it out of there, you're gonna see more. So, but then you deal with the morbidity and extra work of having to put together an olecranon fracture at the end of your case. So. I understand why there's concern to go away from that method, but it's a method I still use. I haven't had huge problems with the olecranon fixation part of it. You do have to, you know, make sure you don't just neglect that part of the procedure, especially at the end of the case. But if you do sparing approaches, I think in my hands they're best served for minimally displaced intra-articular involvement, you know, those who do it feel like you can do your typical sort of C-type intra-articular distal humerus fracture with triceps pairing approaches coming medially and laterally, for instance. You know, the ulnar nerve, you'll always have to identify where it is. Some people feel, you know, they're better off transposing it. Others leave it in situ. I typically leave it in situ. Try not to have it sitting draped over the edge of the plate. And then there's the fixation strategies I talked about. There's sort of parallel plating and orthogonal plating methods. The proponents of orthogonal plating, you know, which would be Sean O'Driscoll and colleagues, feel that and this is before we had locked plates also, but they felt that you know, you were more likely to capture more fragments. Each screw could sort of engage the opposite condyle and also engage multiple fragments, and that, you know, was better than some of the non-locked orthogonal plates. I think with locked plates now, I don't think it really makes that much of a difference which way you go. I often choose an orthogonal approach. I honestly can't think of a case that's fallen apart. You do have to make sure you get compression. Sometimes this may involve a little bit of shortening at the metaphyseal region, if necessary, if there's bone loss there. Other little surgical tips and tricks, you want to make sure you don't, there's sometimes comminution across the articular surface. You want to make sure that you don't create any type of shortening and over compression. Occasionally you have to put a position screw across the articular surface. Traditional AO methods of getting the articular reduction and then fixing that to the shaft can work, but I have to tell you, a lot of times these, you know, fractures, if you have one big fragment that clearly keys into the shaft at the metaphyseal region, I will sometimes get that part first, you know, so you fix the articular fragment to the shaft because you know exactly where it keys in. And a lot of times this is where I'll use those mini fragment plates that you see me use. So I highly recommend it. I think they work well here, in addition to your, you know, locked pre-contoured fixation. And I try to move them early. I think that you certainly, as many say, it's better to have a congruent stiff elbow joint than an incongruent joint. Whereas I do agree with that, I think, you know, having a stiff elbow in general is not good. So if you have a good fixation and you're confident, I do think there's absolute value in moving them early. So make sure you have good fixation so that you can do that. So definitely over my time here. It is, I think, a little bit of a complex topic. I think there's a lot of things for both juniors and seniors to know about this. So thanks for your time.